Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. You know, the hardest thing for most people to grasp as we try to make our eternal lives feel concretely related to our human experience is just where is all of that stuff happening anyway? Where is the afterlife? How does what we're learning about there fit with what we know about here? As a child, I had a lot of trouble with this. You know, you look up and you can just see the clouds. You don't see anything that makes you think there's anything else there. So where is heaven anyway? I mean, can it even be real if we have no evidence that we can, you know, access with our senses? My need to make the afterlife feel real led me to make studying the physics of it all a priority. Once I, you know, had read enough afterlife evidence and put it all together enough that I knew that was real. So I had to figure out where, how did it fit? There are some excellent books on this subject, actually, including, and this is a classic, Michael Talbot's The Holographic Universe. It was first published in 1991. It's now more than 25 years old. Believe it or not, it's still highly relevant today. But then in 2008, I read Dr. R. Craig Hogan's Your Eternal Self, and I loved it so much that for only the second time in my entire life, I actually contacted an author. I invited him to come and present at my Unity Church in Austin that summer, and he packed the whole sanctuary right to the doors. It was amazing. That was the beginning of one of the most important friendships of my life. Craig talked me into turning my afterlife obsession, and it was one and still is, from an engaging personal hobby into a passion that I could share with you. After a decade, Craig Hogan remains my patient mentor, and he is my great, great friend. Even now, I don't think I'd want to do this work without him in my life. As Seek Reality comes up on its fifth anniversary next month, Craig is making his 21st, believe it or not, appearance with us, and he'll be talking today about the topic that first made me understand how important he is to the field of modern afterlife research. He's going to talk about the makeup and the physics of the greater reality. Welcome, Craig. I'm so glad you're here again.
Oh, Roberta, you know, I love to do this. That's why we're doing it for the 21st time.
Yeah, and this is a wonderful friendship because we get each other. And I think he probably would agree that very few people get me, and maybe he feels the same way. So well, it's nice when you find somebody. Isn't it true, Craig, really?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and for both of us. You know, it's exactly. Difficult to find people to talk to. But,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You and I, yeah.
My own husband doesn't get me, but you get me better than he does. That's for sure.
Yeah, but we need that.
Some people won't have heard, the, believe it or not, some of those other interviews. So touch on people just briefly. You started this work later in your life. And how did you get started on it?
Yeah, I actually started at 52 years of age. You know, I was half a century old, and, you know, I felt like a tortoise, you know, that they get to be that age and you know, lumbering around. And I suddenly had things started to happen to me. I started meeting psychics and mediums. They were, came into my life from everywhere. And it seemed like everybody I met was a psychic. And I realized then that there was something more to reality than what we see. And I went to a psychic, and she said to me, well, you know what, you are able to hold things in your hand and identify things about them. So you could hold a playing card in your hand face down, and you'll be able to tell what the color is. And I said, well, sure, I can imagine that. And so she said, well, go home and take a deck of cards and take the one at a time off the top of the deck of cards, but don't look at the card. Put it on your palm, and if it feels warm, it's red. If it feels cold, it's black and make two piles and see what you come up with. And the reason for doing that is it fools the subconscious and lets it come through, and the reality comes through, but you have to have that feeling or sensation to go along with it. So I went home and gave it a try. I sat and I had a deck of cards in my hand face down, and I made two piles. And after I'd gone about through 20 or 25 of them, then I turned over the pile that was supposed to be black. It was supposed to be the cold pile, and every one of them was black.
Wow.
And I turned over the one that was red. It was supposed to be the worm pile, and every one except one was red.
Isn't that amazing? But why the heat? The psychic explained to you why the heat would be in the red ones? What was the reason?
Yeah, I know what it is. It isn't any heat. It isn't actual heat. It's because of the fact that we are only mind. The physical bodies are really not important. The physical bodies are not who we are. Everything that happens happens. What we believe happens in the body is actually happening in the mind. Pain, for instance, happens only in the mind. And
right.
The pleasure happens only in the mind. But then the body is the vehicle that we use in order to have a location for it. And so what happens is when you hold something in your hand and you believe that it's going to be hot or cold, if it's red or black, you just have to believe that. And what happens is that your mind sees the card and it sends the signals to your mind saying, oh, that's a warm card. And it's
so
because it's,
that doesn't have to have been the key. That's just the key that she set up with your mind, and so
could
your
be
mind
anything.
Gave it.
Yep, could be anything.
Wow.
So all you have to do is set it up, and you believe that it's true, and because you believe that it's true, then it happens. We know that's true for multiple personalities that are called dissociative personalities, and the multiple personalities can be a person who has diabetes for one personality, and another personality is completely whole, has no diabetes problems, and if they take the blood test on the one who has diabetes, it will show a high glucose level because
yes.
diabetic. But
that's
then
right.
an instant later, when they go into the other personality, then the glucose level comes right down to normal. And that means that the blood chemistry was changed.
Yes.
And it was just because they believed they were diabetic or believed they were not diabetic. And so the belief system is what makes that difference. We are who we are because of what we believe we are. And that includes everything about us, our physical life, the surroundings that we're in. Everything about us is what it is because we believe that that's what it is.
Wow. You know, I've heard you tell that card story, as you know, now 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to me that it wasn't, oh, well, red is a warmer color. Isn't that stupid?
No, that's what you would think.
But your explanation makes perfect sense, and you are absolutely right about multiple personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
There will be personalities that have serious illnesses, and the bodies will then manifest those illnesses, and then the same body, different personality, problem won't even be there. You're absolutely right about that. I never even thought of it.
And it happens an instant later. There was one young man who had one personality had an allergy to orange juice, and he would break out in hives when he had orange juice. And so he would sit down, and that personality might drink orange juice and break out in hives. When the other personality came in, an instant later, just a second later, the other personality came in that was not allergic to orange juice, the hives went away instantly. Mm-hmm. And this repeatedly happened.
I think that's a wonderful way for us to start this conversation, because for many of us, we are so invested, I was too, in the notion that what we see and feel and perceive is real. What's around us is real. The rest is kind of hypothetical. Of course, the obvious fact is that neither of those is precisely true. Actually, nothing, on a deeper level, nothing is real. But certainly, the reality we perceive around us, we must never trust our absolutely ineffective senses for. I used to tell stories about why our eyes are only seeing like 10% of what we think we're seeing and how our ears are so ineffective. But the story you told nailed it. It's all the mind.
Yeah,
mind.
And, Yeah, and actually, when what we see, if you hold your arm at arm's length in front of you and hold your thumb up, what we see is the size of our thumbnail. So that's what we're attending to. That's what we're paying attention to. And the rest of the world we don't see, but we pull that in, or we build the rest of the world based on what our notions are, our understanding of it is, our memories of it are. And so we build the world, the rest of the world, based upon what's in our minds. So we are attending to a very little part of the world. There's a much greater reality, and most people don't even realize that the greater reality is there. And what we've done is, especially since the advent of the scientific revolution, we have disenchanted the world. We've taken out all of the enchantment because scientists don't want to believe that anything that can't be sensed is real. And what we're learning now is that the part that can be sensed is just a tiny fraction of what the world is.
Yes. That's one of the revelations that comes, I think, from the work that you and I are doing. I mean, scientists themselves know that the physical reality that we perceive is less than 5% of what exists, and there's dark matter and dark energy and most of the rest of it. But that's a very profound fact. If less than 5% is all that they are studying, what's going on in the rest? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that Craig has really devoted a lot of his life to understanding. And frankly, I think you get it better than anybody else does, Craig.
Thank you for that. We live in a reality that is not the reality that we believe it to be. In other words, what we see is deluding us. We're in Earth school. We have to be here. So we're in a simulation. And while we're in this simulation, everything that we see has been brought to us and given to us to make us successful and to help us learn lessons in this simulation. But it is a simulation. And what it's much like, we are sitting in an auditorium watching a movie, and we're sitting with all of our loved ones. They're all around us in all the other seats, and it's dark, and we're watching the screen, and we're involved in what the protagonist is doing, and we're crying, and we're laughing, and we're having a good time with what's going on in the screen. And all we have to do at any time is turn on the lights and look around, and there we are. The reality is that we're just all there together. And when we go out of the movie, we just walk out of the movie arm in arm, laughing and having a good time, and go into another movie.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. I want to talk about your eternal self. I met Craig only because I was so impressed and delighted with this book back in 2008. It's amazing. I feel as if I've known you forever, but it's really only been a decade. Mm-hmm. But I don't think nearly enough people understand the importance of what you did in this book, which was really to lay the groundwork for all the things we're talking about now. And what impresses me is, you did the same thing our wonderful Sandra Champlain does. You investigated and used yourself as your own experimental subject in seeing what was true and what was real, which is astonishing to me. You're really pretty psychic, it turns out.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I discovered. And all of this I was brought to. In other words, I was drawn to it. But I learned I had psychometry abilities, then I decided to try what's called a remote viewing. And remote viewing means that you sit in a location and you just want to, in your mind, have a perception. You want to see things or experience things or feel things that are hundreds or thousands of miles away. And so I knew that people could do that, and I decided to sit down and give it a try. So I sat down in front of a computer monitor. There are places online where you can find what are called targets. And the targets are things that are set up somewhere in the world. Some of them are in Hawaii. Some of them are in Australia, New Zealand. And they set them up, and they give you a meaningless set of letters. And it could be KGBF. And it has absolutely no meaning. And what you do is then you sit down and you relax, you close your eyes, concentrate on whatever those words are, and say, I'd like to see whatever it's there, whatever that KGBF is responsible for, whatever it's associated with. And then if you using remote viewing, images start to come into your mind. And what would happen is I would get the images, and I would open up my eyes and sketch whatever it was and write a description of it and close my eyes and go back to it and look again. And And I did that for the first time. And when I opened up my eyes and I saw that what I had drawn looked like buildings and they looked like cathedrals. They were tall and they were very golden looking. And there was an overhang of some sort over all of the buildings. And some of the buildings are very small. One of them is very large in the front. And so then I then looked at the picture because they would put the picture on site so that you could see it. And you, I looked at the picture and it was a picture of a view of Mayan ruins. And there were these huge cathedral looking buildings and they were off. Some of them were small in the distance and one of them was in the front prominent and they had gold light shining on it. And so, and above it, then there were clouds. So you could see the clouds above it. So I realized that, that I was able to see things that were hundreds of thousands of miles just by wanting to see them. And what I've learned since then is that anything in the universe is accessible to us. That means anything in the future, anything in the past, anything in any location is accessible. All we have to do, because the fact that we're one with it, is close our eyes, intend to access it, and we'll be able to get it. We'll be able to get it in our minds. And it includes sights, sounds, feelings, in our guided afterlife connections, in which we have people have reunions with loved ones who are on another plane of life, but they're still here. They actually have sensations with them. They kiss them. They hug them. They walk and hold hands. They stroke their hair. So all these things are in the mind. The mind is able to access anything. The mind is all that there really is in life.
It's all that there is. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about your eternal self is that you start by dismantling all the things we believe about ourselves. Mm-hmm. You start by saying, where are you? And then you demonstrate how the brain is really not doing much of anything. And I remember when I first read this, I was overwhelmed by it because you make all of these, I mean, it seems obvious as you're reading it for the first time that, of course, what you are saying, Craig, is right. And I just never knew that before. So where are you? What are you? I cannot tell you, everyone listening, that if you have any question about any of this stuff, be sure to read this book because it makes it all seem simple. And it shows how the evidence we have fits with what we already know. What's your relationship to other people? Frankly, if you just pick up the book and you read its table of contents, it tells you everything that's in the book. That's another thing that's great about it, because if you wonder where you read something, you can go right back and find it. How long did it take you to write this? It looks like it. I mean, all my books I write rather quickly. They're all channeled, but it looks to me as if you really put a lot of effort into this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long it took. It took at least a year. Most of it was in getting the notes together because I did a lot of research to be able to get the book together. The writing was easy once the notes were together, but it took some time to do that. And I was given a lot. You know, I know that that I co-authored this book with a woman on the other side. And her name is Greta Alexander. She was a psychic here in Illinois, and I knew her when she was here. And I actually had found out that she wanted to write a book with me when I had a reading from Laurie Campbell, who is one of the foremost mediums of living today. And Laurie said that she saw a woman there, and she was a woman who was, she was dancing, and she was showing her that she was dancing, and that she knew me. And it's because Greta had was very much overweight, and she always wanted to dance, and she was never able to dance. And as she described her, I knew it was Greta. And she said, oh, this woman is saying she wants to write a book with you. And so I said, well, that would be wonderful. I have one that I'm working on right now, and I'd love to do that. And so I decided to do an automatic writing and connect with Greta because I do automatic writing. Automatic writing means it's really also called inspirational writing, and that's where you sit with a pad of paper and a pencil, and you just close your eyes, relax, and the words that come to your mind, you scribble them down. Don't look at the words. Just scribble them down as quickly as they come to you, and keep scribble, scribble, scribble. scribbling. And so you ask questions, then you scribble them down. And what's happening is that when you're scribbling down the words, that keeps your mind occupied so that it bypasses your conscious mind and the words come directly from people on the other side to you. And so I asked Greta, I said to her, was that really you? Did you really want to write the book? And she said, test me. And I wrote that down. I was getting the scribbles. And I said, okay, well, then what can you tell me that will happen in the near future that will show me that you really want to write the book with me and it's you? And she said, Hurricane Ivan targets Cuba right away, just very quick like that. And I knew there was a hurricane out in the Atlantic, and it was far out in the Atlantic, though. I didn't know what was going to be going on with it. So I watched the MSNBC online for two or three days, and about 3 days later, bang, there it was, Hurricane Ivan targets Cuba on the headline on MSNBC. And so I knew it was her, and I knew that I was communicating with her and that she wanted to write the book. And so we wrote the book, and I dedicated it to her.
Well, and I see that. The dedication is to Greta Alexander. You finally mm-hmm. wrote your book.
Yeah.
And so when you pick this book up, everyone, that's the backstory of the dedication, because that's all he says there. I think what we're finding more and more is that those of us working in this field all are working very closely with beings not in bodies. I have, you know, confessed to everybody I now understand everything I write is channeled. I really can't write a word. I can't put two words together if I don't have someone working with me there. And I'm accepting that. That's okay. But it, clearly then, this is the work of someone who really knew, because she was there working with you and all the evidence you've gathered. And you're, mm-hmm. and it's a very easy read, too. It's something that many books, in my experience in this field, are somewhat heavy, especially the thicker ones, and yours is somewhat thick. But this is just an easy, fun read. So I'm going to start promoting this book again, because, frankly, I think it's the primer for people who really want to understand what's going on. Would you change anything now, do you think, after 10 years?
No, as a matter of fact, it's very current. And everything that we've discovered is in there. There is more evidence. You know, we're always getting more evidence.
Right.
And so I would add evidence to it. But as far as changing what's in there, no, it's it was on the spot. But as you say, it was inspired. It was channeled to me and by Greta and the team that was working with her on the book on the other side. And we don't realize that. People don't realize how much of what they believe and what they feel and what they do during their normal everyday life is inspired by people on the other side. It's like we're in a nursery, and we're little infants that are in these cribs in this nursery, and we've got doctors taking care of us and nurses taking care of us and a family, and we've got all of these people swirling around us, and all we're doing is laying in the nursery and kicking our feet. And we're continually being cared for. We're continually receiving things. And if people will just open up to it and understand that and re-enchant the world, then they'll begin to get the messages. They'll begin to get the leadings from people on the other side, because they're always coming to them, and they're anxious for us to feel that love. They're embracing us. Then they want us to feel the embrace. And all we have to do is learn to be open to it.
I think it's especially important now when we are working, all of us who are in this field are working so hard to raise the consciousness vibration of this planet. It's especially important. I think it's almost incumbent on each person on this planet. If you care about the future of the world, make sure you educate yourself about what's really going on and begin to raise your own spiritual vibration. And as Greg just said, all your guides, all your loved ones are really so, I almost said they're dying to help you, but no, they're very eager to help you to raise your vibration, because only when we all are doing it is the world going to really be able to change. Nothing else is going to work. All right, let's start to talk about what is really going on. What is reality, in fact? Talk again about the primary role of consciousness.
Yeah, we have to understand consciousness to understand reality. If we want to understand what the greater reality is, what the real reality is that we're living in, we are going through our lives now rather like moles going through a tunnel, and all we see is that little bit of in front of us, and there's a whole other world that we're not seeing. But if we want to really understand something outside of that little tunnel that we're in, all we have to do is go into the mind. because that's where it is. So anything that we can say about the mind is what we can say about the greater reality. And when we look into the mind, we realize that we have access to anything in the universe, anything in the past, the present, the future, anything anywhere in the universe. And that's because the mind is all part of that. So if you say, well, where are those things? Well, all you have to do is go into the mind and look there, and you'll see that they are in the mind. Then that helps you to understand that when we talk about the greater reality or what the universe is or what reality is, it's all in consciousness. And we then are the beings that are in control of that, because we're the observers, we're the watchers, we're the actors who are behind the consciousness. And so we make things happen in every aspect of the world by having the intention of things happening and then following through with them. We are, in other words, one with God.
So what is God?
So if you talk about God, what we're really talking about is not the Anglo-Saxon term God and that comes out of the Judeo-Christian tradition. It isn't an old man on a mountain with a white beard.
Right.
What we really are talking about is the creative source that is behind everything that it happens. As Amit Goswami said, there is nothing but God. So when we talk about what is God or who is God or where is God, there is nothing but God. And what that means is that God is the progenitor, is the creator, is the force that is behind everything that we experience and everything that we are. And we are one with that force. We are co-creators of this universe with God because we are one with God. And so there's no great mystery about what God is or who God is or where God is. And it is just all we have to do is look at each other. And that's why in some Eastern traditions, they will bow when they meet somebody. The reason is because they're bowing in the presence of God, and they realize that this is true. So our consciousness is where we would, if we want to understand what the universe is, what reality is, and what God is, all we have to do is go into our own minds, and we'll find it there.
And now talk about time, because that's one of the hardest things for people to grasp, the notion that there is no objective time.
No, we do have a time that's on the earth plane. So there's no doubt about the fact that we have time, we grow older, and we have things happen to us. We go to a symphony and the whole symphony plays out. That happens over time. So there's no doubt that there is a time of sorts. But that's for the earth plane. And what that means is that when we go off of the earth plane, we will continue to have time in the next life because we expect it to be there. Anything we expect to be there will be there. So we'll have that sense of time. But in the reality, as we let go of that sense of time, then everything that we experience, everything that is an experience, can happen immediately. So we can have an experience of something that happened hundreds of years ago or thousands of years ago, because of the fact that it's accessible to us. Everything is accessible to us. And so when we talk about time, we do have sequences. In other words, we go to a symphony because we want to see it go from beginning to end. But as Einstein and other physicists discovered, there's no reason for the arrow of time to go from beginning to end the way that we see it. It could go backwards, could go the other direction. It all is a matter of the way in which we're experiencing it. Our experiences are what determine what we feel is time. So in other words, then if we look at time now, time as an instant, as what is happening right now, then our lifetimes are like a series of experiences. And an experience can be something like the single tone of a bell, or an experience can be a chord on a musical instrument that's several tones at once, or an experience can be a whole sequence of events that goes from beginning to end. But these are all just experiences, and they could happen in reverse order. They could happen at any moment in our experiences. And so as a result of that, then time is happening as we see it in the earth plane in a sequence from birth to the transition that we call death. And it happens in that sequence, but that's only maintained because of the fact that we want to have those experiences in a sequence that we can understand, that we can learn from in Earth School. They could happen in any order. They could happen at any time. But while we're in Earth School, we need to have them happen in that sequence, and that's what we call time.
So, and how does all of this relate to the afterlife? Where is the afterlife? Where is that?
Yeah, the afterlife is where we are. We're living on a spiritual plane right now, and we are in tune with, or we vibrate with, these things that are on this part of the spiritual plane. And so we all are experiencing the same things, rather like we're experiencing a dream together. And so we have the same dream only because of the fact that we have agreed to, or we are in the same circumstance. And so we're experiencing these things together. But they are only experiences. So I'm in the same room with you, and when I'm in that room, we have the experience of that room together. But that experience is all there is. So what happens is that when people are experiencing on another plane, all they're doing is going through a different set of experiences together. So they're having their own experience.
They're all in the same place, right? It's because it's all energy.
Yeah, and there isn't a place. So we have to get rid of the notion of place.
See, you're always ahead.
There's no place. Mm-hmm. There is no place. And so we have to get rid of the notion of place and rather think of it instead of as state of mind. And to say that we have experiences, we can have an experience of a room, or we can have an experience of being in a field, a meadow someplace. Those are just two different experiences. And what happens when we are, quote, on a plane, all that means is that our set of experiences is in that meadow or in that room at that moment. And so then we are on that plane having those experiences with everybody else who's on the plane. So everybody else is in that meadow or everybody else is in that room. We're all having the experiences together. But we could as easily decide we're going to change experiences and we're not going to stay here. We're going to have the experiences with that other group of people. I'd rather be in the meadow than be in this room.
Yes.
And so then we just say, well, I'm going to be in that meadow. And so then that's it. You just start to experience the meadow. You start to experience the flowers, experience the sunlight. And it's a different matter of experiences that we're having together. But we, because of the fact that we're in Earth School, we have agreed that we're going to go through this experience because we're going to have these lessons that we're learning in Earth School. Since we've decided that we're going to do that, then we stay in it and we have cause and effect and we have sequences. We go from beginning to end. We start from birth and we go all the way through the transition in which we go into the next plane of life. And so we follow that sequence all the way through and we're really into it and we stay in character. So we won't go over to the meadow. You know, we're going to stay in the room. This is going to be where we're going to be. But we could, I mean, it is potentially true because we are the ones who are the originators. We are the creators. It is potentially true that we could simply go to another plane and live there and be there. Now, we do know this. We do know that people have experiences on this plane of life in which they suddenly become another person. And this is documented, where they will just one day completely out of the blue, they will insist that they're another person. There's an instance of a woman who was Ukrainian. She spoke Ukrainian. She was a mathematician. She was an upper-class person and very knowledgeable. She was not married, had no children. She insisted one day, completely out of the blue, that her name was Lucia. That she lived, I think it was in Italy. She had several children. She had no knowledge of math. She spoke perfect Italian, and she couldn't speak Ukrainian anymore. She couldn't understand or speak Ukrainian anymore.
Is that a walk-in? Is that what we call a walk-in?
Well, it's, you know, that's what we describe it because we need to have a way of understanding
it.
Yeah, we have to have a way to talk about it. But it isn't really that. It's only the fact that we are this person whom we are because we have agreed to have these experiences with this body, and we only experience the body. It's not like the body was something which is objective and it's going to be there if we're not there. Our minds are creating the body. And so we have the body, and it's easy for would be easy for the mind to go to another body to use another body. And that's what happens, that she started, for some reason that we don't understand, using another body. But the fact is that all of these things are possible only because of the fact that there is nothing but mind. There's nothing but consciousness. And the whole world is just experiences. So we're having the experiences, and we can experience another plane, or we can experience another body, and we can experience anything differently. But it seems like it's rigid, because while we're in Earth school, we just have to follow the lessons. We've got to, if we're going to learn these lessons, we've got to follow them through. We had to stay in character during Earth school. And so
everyone,
we follow
you,
through.
You can hear that talking with Craig Hogan is a lot of fun. He can do this for an entire dinner or for however long you have time to spend with him. But one thing I want to make sure we talk about this time is an upcoming major event. The Afterlife Research and Education Institute is holding its second annual symposium in Scottsdale, Arizona in September. What are the dates, Craig?
It's going to be September 13th through the 16th. The 13th is going to be workshops, and the actual symposium is going to be the 14th through the 16th.
This was such a big success last year that it had to move to a much bigger and more luxurious hotel. And it's just going to be fabulous. And I want Craig to talk with you about it a little more, because this is something which, if this is an area that interests you, I think you'll be sorry if you don't get to be part of it this year. So tell us a little more about it, Craig.
Yeah, we formed the Afterlife Research and Education Institute, and the website is afterlifeinstitute.org. And we formed it because of the fact that we're seeing a change in humankind. We're seeing a change in consciousness. And the remarkable thing is that it's happening at the same time there's so much atrocity, so much cruelty, so much struggle in the world. And the reason that we're seeing it is because we believe that the forces that are helping us, that are behind us, and that includes forces from a great number of levels, including the creative force and from people in other dimensions, they're working with us now to make a change in the world, and we can see that happening. And so what's happening is there are little fires that are being ignited all over, and these are the researchers. These are the people who are finding out the afterlife and the other planes of life and afterlife communication, and they're helping us to learn how to communicate with our loved ones on the other side and discovering new words, new ways. We have 16 ways of doing it now, and we know that virtually everyone can communicate at any time with a loved one who is living on the next plane of life. One of the methods is 98% successful. So we know that there are these little fires of the researchers, the developers, the educators, and all over the world. They're igniting these fires. And so they're learning, and they're bringing things to light, and the people on the other side are inspiring, and the teams that are working with us on the other side. And so we formed AREI, Afterlife Research and Education Institute, to support them. We want to be able to bring them out and help them and publicize what they're doing and help people to learn the methods that they're discovering. So AREI is a service organization. If anybody wants to have a meaningful life or have meaning in their life, then this is the place where it's going to happen. What we're understanding now is that the projection is that 70% of the world, and that's going to be 8 billion people, within the next 6 to 8 years, 70% of the world by then will have access to the internet, so that there will be communication among people over the world. That means 70% of the world is going to have access to all of this information that we're learning. If we can bring it to people and help them to understand and help them to change their lives and communicate with their loved ones and realize who they are, and that there is no such thing as death, and there's nothing to be feared about it, if we can just bring that to people, it will make a change in humankind.
Yes.
And so we know that over the 6 to 8 years, our mission, what we want to do, is to help the people who are doing this work, who are making these discoveries, and get the word out to people, and then humankind will change, and we know that we can lift ourselves out of the struggles that we're experiencing right now if people change one person at a time. And we know that that can happen if we support these researchers. So that's what AREI is doing. We hold a symposium once a year in which we bring together the leading researchers who are doing this work. We have researchers in the technology of communicating with the other side. It's called instrumental transcommunication, or EVP. And the foremost researcher is Sonia Rinaldi from Brazil. She's going to be there. We have mediums come who are very talented mediums who are doing this work, and they're going to be speaking about mediumship and actually doing demonstrations. And we have people who are knowledgeable about other areas of communication. My own area of specialty is in self-induced afterlife communication. In other words, we teach people how to have their own afterlife communications, and I will be teaching people there how to do that. And so we have a great variety of people in a wide variety of areas who are going to be speaking, and we're inviting the public, we're inviting everybody to come and hear these experts talk to each other about what they're doing, about how it can happen, and help them learn about the afterlife and about afterlife communication.
One of the most extraordinary things about the conferences you've put on in the past and last year's symposium to me were the fact that your personality permeates the whole event. It's like a love fest. I mean, I'm serious, everyone. It really feels very different from any other meeting you've ever attended because of the fact that there's so much love there and so much joy. So I really recommend anybody who's interested in as a seeker, I recommend that you think about going. What's the website again?
It's the website for the symposium is afterlifesymposium.org. Or you can get or you can get to it through afterlifeinstitute.org. That's the website for the ARII.
I'm still not sure whether I'm going to be there, everyone, because people have been asking me that. If I can come, I will. But the problem is we're working on this very major project that's not quite announced yet that I think may be taking all of my time. But you all know how to get in touch with me anyway. It's through robertagrimes.com. So let's have a conversation whenever you'd like to have one with me. Now, where is all of this going? You see an opening because of the internet to the whole world in giving this information to them. But it can't be then just symposia, right? Because that's just, in this case, there may be 1,000 people there, but that's still only 1,000 people out of all those 8 billion.
Right. We have to get the word out to people, and it's going to be through small groups. It's going to be through local groups. If you can imagine what it's like now, we have about 4 billion people in the major Abrahamic religions, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And you've got all of these churches out here with people getting together every Sunday, and they get together and they talk and they compare notes and they share with each other. And all of that activity, all of that stimulus that they're giving to each other, if that were given to what we know to be true now about the greater reality, about the fact that people don't die, that there is no death, if we could just have people come together once a week to discuss that and talk about it and learn the methods of communication, then that would make the change in humankind. So we know that it has to happen in small groups, and that's like the early church, and the early Christian church.
Yes.
And they were called ecclesias, and they were little groups that got together. There was no big church. In fact, there was no doctrine. There was no consistent belief. And so these ecclesias would get together and house churches, and that's where that was the beginning of the Christian religion. And so now what we're focusing on is having groups get together. And we want to have local groups, and we're encouraging people to form local groups. We're going to put the materials together so that people can learn from them. And we're also doing Zoom groups. We're doing online groups. So that it's rather like Skype. Zoom is an online medium through which people will get on, and you can see through video, you can see the other people who are there. And so you're having this meeting with people all around the world. We have a meeting once a week on Sundays for people all around the world, and they're coming from Australia and New Zealand and from the UK, from the United States, from Canada, and we all get on at the same time, and we have presentations, and people then discuss the presentations. But in doing that, what we're doing is we're learning about it from each other. And if we can have, instead of having, right now we have maybe about 50, if we can have 100,000 or a million, or if we can have 4 billion, the way that the Abrahamic religions have right now, then we're going to have people getting together every week to talk about this. And this is where the change will come. It'll come through these small groups, through people getting together to talk. And all we have to do is get the word out.
Zoom groups, just go to afterlifeinstitute.org. Very mm-hmm. exciting potential in these Zoom groups. And Wendy Zaman is doing a wonderful job. She kind of heads that. Mm-hmm. But we're coming to the end of our time, so I'm sorry. I'm going to have Craig back next time. We're going to talk only about the afterlife because he's the real expert there. But meanwhile, thank you so much for being here, Craig. Please consider yourself hugged, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you. See you soon.
Meanwhile, this has been Secret Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. How much fun this has been. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, we're going to be talking with a great afterlife experiencer and popularizer, Sandra Champlain. Sandra began her voyage 15 years ago as a young woman who was terrified of death, and basically, she did kind of what Craig did. She made herself her own experimental subject. She convinced herself of what was true. She wrote a terrific book called We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. And then she started her podcast series, which everybody loves, which is called We Don't Die Radio. Sandra is one of the very few people that we literally can call a bundle of joy. It radiates from her. You're going to love talking with Sandra next week. So please, please join us. And this week, of course, our wonderful guest has been Dr. R. Craig Hogan. He is the leading afterlife expert worldwide. Every time I think that's not true, I talk to him again and I realize it still is. Craig does the best work of anyone I've ever encountered in making these concepts seem sensible to everyone. And his book, which is called Your Eternal Self, really should be in everybody's library. As you know, I have a bunch of nonfiction books, but no time to list them now. If you want to talk about any of my books or anything at all, always know that you can contact me through robertagrimes.com. I always answer emails as long as you give me the correct email address. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you in particular are a powerful, eternal being. Always knowing, never forgetting that you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.